Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 99. I'm recording it on Friday, February 20th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 13. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong, long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin MacLeod at the Incompetech.com site. The title of this particular selection is Tea Roots. The title of the podcast is Dumb is Smart. I Don't Know is Powerful. I've talked before about a phenomenon, and this whole podcast really is about this phenomenon. I talked before about how your everyday investor, your just everyday typical investor who doesn't have any particular expertise, often stumbles upon the most important truths of investing. The questions that the experts never talk about, or if they try to talk about it, they talk about it in these complicated ways that nobody can make sense of. Because they don't understand, because they don't know the answer, but they don't tell you that, of course. It's all like Wizard of Oz. It's all, you know, it's all men behind a curtain, you know, pulling levers and turning wheels. And it's all, you know, it's not all gibberish, but a lot of what you hear is gibberish, in my opinion, in Rob Bennett's opinion. And what I love is when real-life people, they get into situations where, you know, unfortunately, this tends to only happen during price crashes when people lose a lot of money. But at some point, people are too intimidated by experts. Way, way, way too intimidated. People think the investing experts know more than they do, and it's, boy, is that ever not true. Obviously, there are some things they know. They know the things that are in the books, but in terms of knowing how investing works in the real world, anybody who studies the subject for, I don't know, 20, 30 hours can go ahead of most of the experts. I know that sounds shocking, but that is truly what I believe. And if you study it for more than that, you can fly way ahead of them. And I've seen it. I've seen lots of ordinary people at all of the discussion boards at which I've posted who don't know a lot of things, but they know a few things really well. They know the important things. And they understand what matters in investing better than a lot of these experts getting paid $1 million. But of course, the truth is, a lot of the experts aren't really paid $1 million because of their quote-unquote expertise. They're paid $1 million to sell stocks. And I don't mean that in a cynical way. That's what they're paid for. That's their job. And there's nothing, you know, why shouldn't they be? We're all paid for a job. But people need to learn that when somebody gets paid $1 million to sell stocks, that you can't necessarily take everything they say as 100% gospel. But anyway, that's a little riff. But what happens is things will happen that clearly do not fit the story being told by the experts. And every now and then you'll see the everyday investor just asking this basic ABC type question, and they'll often apologize. They'll say, "Oh, I'm sure everybody knows the answer. I'm sorry, I'm so dumb." And the question is gets right to the heart of it. And if they could get straight answers to that question, it would change their life, because they'd understand for the first time how stock investing really works. And from there, once you know the basics, you can just build and build and build. You can just get better and better and better. But until you know the basics, you're always going to be spinning your wheels. You're always going to be going around and round and round in circles. So the key to successful investing is learning those basics. And to learn, of course, you've got to ask the question. And the experts are probably not going to tell you. They're not inclined to tell you. And I think because they don't know themselves, truth be told, in a lot of cases. But I did a podcast early on called something like, when stock prices go down, where does all the money go? And that was one of those questions that people ask. And I just get very excited when I see that. And I've done a couple others along that general theme. And one of those came up today at the Bogleheads.org discussion board. And for a board that bans honest posting, they sure do have a lot of good threads at that place. I sure do like that board. So now what this fellow asked was, let me see. I'm going to read a little bit from the thread. I hope I don't have time to read too much of it, but I'll read a little bit. Yeah, the guy who put up the thread went up on Thursday, February 19th, if you're trying to find it. Thursday, February 19th, 2009. The author of the thread starter is a guy named Roosevelt G. And the title of the thread is Investing Knowledge, The First Are Last, and Vice Versa. And so the common sense observation this guy is putting forward is he's saying, well, I'll read it, but he's saying, I went to the trouble to learn these things about investing, you know, that the experts tell me, and I thought, gee, I've got it figured out. I'm a smart guy. I'm smarter than these people, because these other people admit they know nothing. They admit they know nothing. And what I'm finding is they're doing a lot better than me. You know, in other words, the dumber you are, the better you do. So, he's saying, why is that? It's a great question. And it's true. It's absolutely true. Intellect is greatly overrated. Greatly, greatly, greatly overrated in terms of investing success. My guess is, I think intellect may actually be a contrary indicator. I don't know that this is so, but it wouldn't surprise me if the more educated, obviously intellect can help. Intellect put to good purposes can be a big plus in investing. But it wouldn't surprise me if, as a general rule, intellect has a negative correlation with investing success, because the problem is what causes investing problems are emotions, pride, stubbornness, anger, indifference, sloth, ignoring problems, these kinds of things. And intellect can be put to use putting up barriers to understanding. See, intellect can be used for good purposes when you use it, to solve logic chains, or to reason through something. That's a good form of intellect. And intellect can be used for rationalization. And my experience is that in investing, 80 to 90% of the time it's being used for negative purposes. It's being used for rationalization. So most of the energy being put into quote-unquote understanding investing is being put into not understanding. It's being put into avoiding knowledge. And so the person who doesn't think they're very smart, the person who just thinks, maybe they are smart in their job, whatever their field is, but they don't have a lot of time to put into investing, they're sort of intimidated. If they put a little bit of effort, they can shoot to the head of the class, because they don't have all these hang-ups. They don't have a need to, impress other people in the field and to know what the Sharpe ratio is for my friends at indexuniverse.com. They're not worried about all that gibberish. And they can just learn the realities and just shoot ahead. Anyway, let me read a little bit of what Roosevelt says. He says, I have been a faithful diehard and have read the books, Bernstein, Swedrow, Furry, and attended the meetings. Although I may have had 10% too much equity pre-crash, I pretty much played by the rules and always stayed the course. I intend to do so, but I find the world seems upside down to me. Two types of people make me wonder. In the first category are those who profess total ignorance of investing and only bought bonds. I think he means to say bought only bonds. And bought only bonds because they didn't understand investing. In other words, these people feel so dumb and so intimidated that they're afraid to buy stocks because they don't understand them. I used to think that they were hopelessly lost, and now I think I was the one who was clueless. Well, that fits right in to one of Rob Bennett's principles of investing. If you don't understand the ABCs of stock investing, you should not have $10 in stocks. That's Rob Bennett's opinion. And if you think there is any chance whatsoever that passive investing could ever work in the real world as a long-term strategy, you don't understand the ABCs of investing. You should not have $10 invested in stocks. That's Rob Bennett's opinion. That's a very controversial opinion. Certainly, you won't hear many other people say that, but you will hear Rob Bennett say it. I just think stock investing is too dangerous to put money in. If you don't understand the basics, you don't need to spend a lot of time in order to invest in stocks, but I think you need to spend at least, I don't know, I would say you should probably spend at least 20 hours learning about investing before putting money in stocks. You should not do it without spending that amount of time. And if at the end of 20 hours you still think that passive investing makes sense, that the idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels is a good idea, my personal belief is that you're fooling yourself in thinking that you understand stocks. And you know, spend another 20 hours until you get it. Just keep spending more and more, and however many 20 hours as it takes, just put that in. But don't put money into stocks until, I guess I'd say, until one of two things happens. Either you understand that passive investing can never work, or you are firmly convinced that Rob Bennett is wrong. If you're firmly convinced Rob Bennett is wrong and you have given it some thought, you know, you worked through the logic chain, well, Rob Bennett's not God. Maybe I'm wrong. Then go ahead and put your money in stocks. But I implore you to think that through before you put any money on the table. So one category is people who know nothing about stocks won't even put money in stocks because they're so intimidated. And he says, I used to think these people were pathetic, and now I think, you know, I'm pathetic. The second category consists of those who panicked and sold their equities in the spring and summer. Again, these were people who I thought were crazy because they did not understand buy and hold. It is looking more like I did not understand that markets can be depressed for many decades and that the risks of staying the course may outweigh the benefits if you only have 30 years to live. So basically, the rules are flipped. And that, by the way, that second paragraph is another rule of Rob Bennett. And I have an article at the website, probably in the Stock Drunk section. And I wrote this article several years ago, and it was, I can't remember the title. It was so long ago. I wrote it several years ago, but it was basically, I wrote the article for people. This is back in the time when prices were insane before the price crash. And people would say, I'm thinking of getting out of stocks. And the quote unquote experts would say, oh no, stay the course, buy and hold, timing doesn't work, stocks for the long run. And I felt bad for these people. And I wrote an article saying, look, you know, getting out of stocks may be the best thing you ever did. I didn't say you should always get out of stocks, but I said, you know, it depends on the reasons. And I gave the reasons that make it a good idea. And I can't remember the title, but, you know, it's basically saying it, you know, there's nothing, you shouldn't, don't let people make you feel ashamed. You know, if you have a feeling that you should be getting out of stocks, it may well be based on common sense. It may be your common sense telling you that this, you know, this expert advice doesn't stand up to scrutiny. And maybe you better listen to that warning bell. So back to Roosevelt. He says, so basically the rules are flipped and the least sophisticated investors and panic sellers look smart, while I am fairly sheepish about all the investing knowledge tucked away in my brain. Maybe a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. Yes, Roosevelt, you've got it. Maybe a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. Truer words were never spoken. Am I the only one who feels this way? Should I start a chapter of former investment gurus anonymous? Yes! Yes! Start a chapter of former investment gurus anonymous. Please do. I'm not making fun of Roosevelt. Roosevelt is right on. Roosevelt is, he's probably in pain, he's suffering, but suffering is what brings us to the truth. And Roosevelt is hitting on a very important truth. I am not making fun of him at all. Please don't think I am. I'm being playful, but Roosevelt is very much on the right track. I wish I could give him a hug, you know, shake his hand and tell him, look, man, here's the story. We all have to go through this. I'm not smarter than Roosevelt, certainly. You know, we all have different life experiences. I had a set of life experiences that permitted me to learn the realities of investing, you know, back in the mid-1990s. And to a greater extent in the last 7 years during the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. But I could have been in Roosevelt's shoes. I thought I was smart once upon a time. I'm sure that, you know, I know that there are many philosophers who say, you know, you're only truly smart when you know how much you don't know. And boy, is that ever true in investing. You see, you know, that statement he has where he says, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. Well, that's the story of passive investing. Passive investing, you'll hear me knock it all the time. This is podcast 99, and I'll bet if you went back and listened to the earlier 99. Is there anybody who's listened to all 99 other than me? Tell the truth. Don't hurt my feelings. I mean, don't spare my feelings. Tell the truth. If passive, you've never heard anybody. There's no one on planet Earth who was a more severe critic of passive investing than Rob Bennett. But I am here to say passive investing has a lot of brilliant ideas in it. I think the ideas of passive investing, the ideas promoted by John Bogle, are going to they're going to revolutionalize investing. That's what I believe. I believe we're living through the early years of an investing revolutionalizer. And Bogle's ideas are the past of investing and the future of investing. Bogle's rational ideas are the future of investing. And what Bogle did was he was a little too smart for his own good. He had some brilliant breakthrough, wonderful ideas, and he had one really, 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 really bad idea. And the really, 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 really bad idea was this idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. And that took passive investing, which would have been a wonderful strategy, and turned it into the worst investing strategy ever developed by the human mind. And it's put the U.S. economy in a crisis that, frankly, may ruin us all. You know, we need to joke about it. We need to be lighthearted about it. But the truth is, it may ruin us all if we don't come to terms with what we've done to ourselves with this horrible, horrible idea. They call it an idea. I question if it's even an idea. It's an emotional impulse. It's a self-destructive emotional impulse. But that's the point. The point Roosevelt says is, you know, maybe a little knowledge is dangerous. If it weren't for the brilliant ideas, this passive investing would have never caught on. It's because the worst idea in history was packaged with gold, with these wonderful ideas, that passive investing caught on. And once it caught on, you know, you couldn't stop it. People were going to destroy themselves, and you could try, but people weren't going to listen. And it's a paradox. Why would how could being intelligent ever hurt, you know? How could being dumb ever be good? Well, this is how. I'll go to the Bible, you know, to explain it, but I won't be able to explain it well because I don't understand the Bible very well. But I can give you a hint. I don't really read the Bible. I wish I did. I don't, But there's a you know, sometimes there are things in the Bible that just puzzle me. And in the story of creation, you know, Adam and Eve, they have that thing where they go to, it may be that somebody out there knows the answer to this and they can send me an email, and please do. You know, I'd like to know the answer. It has nothing to do with investing, but I'm tying it to investing here. But I mean, the question is bigger than just investing. But the thing that Adam and Eve are forbidden to do, you know, we always say, well, Eve ate the apple. But the way it's written up, at least in the versions I've heard, I think different Bibles are different, but what I've always heard is, Adam and Eve were told by God not to eat the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And I am a reporter by trade. I'm a curious person. I'm a person who likes to ask questions. And so I'm, you know, if I was in a garden and there was a tree called the tree of knowledge of good and evil, I'd say, hey, Eve, that's our tree. That's our tree. What are we waiting for? Let's, you know, wouldn't be Eve asking me to take the apple. I'd be giving it to her, saying, Eve, this is it. This is it. This is it, girl. This is the tree of knowledge of good and evil. This is the one. I laugh in the face of my doom, my impending doom. So, but it always puzzled me. Why is that a bad thing? Why aren't, you know, why of all the trees in the Garden of Eden, why is it that the one you're not allowed to eat is the tree of knowledge of good and evil? What's that about? These are the sort of things that keep me up at night, when I'm not worrying about safe withdrawal rates. I can't give you a definitive answer. I don't know what I'm sure the biblical scholars have an answer to this question. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe I missed catechism class that day. You know, probably. Probably I was hanging out somewhere and I missed it. And my whole life I've been struggling with this question, and it's just a pathetic thing because everybody else knows and nobody will tell me, but I don't understand. But I puzzle over and I try to think, well, why would that be bad? And I think it has something to do with the theme of this podcast and the theme of that thread starter by Roosevelt, that, how can I put it, humans want knowledge. And I don't think God is against us having knowledge. I think there are some religions that maintain that, but that's certainly not it. I don't think it's something the Catholic religion argues. There are lots of great scientists who were Catholic, and they were serious Catholics. So, you know, there were Catholic universities and all these sorts of things. So I find it a little hard to believe that I don't think the Catholic religion is opposed to knowledge, and I don't think many others are. I know that Jewish religion is certainly not opposed to knowledge, and there certainly are many Protestant faiths that are not opposed to knowledge, the acquisition of knowledge. So, I think there may be some. It may be that there are some that are, but I don't think in general that's so. But I guess the way I look at it is, as I'm saying in the theme of the podcast, knowledge can be put to good uses and bad uses, and knowledge is sort of how we acquire power. And I guess I do think to some extent that I think the sin that's being warned of is the sin of thinking that, you know, the sin is that Adam and Eve were trying to become God themselves. And so what they were trying to do was to acquire enough knowledge that they didn't need God, that they could give up faith. In other words, they would be the font of the knowledge. The knowledge would be coming from them. And that's how the devil tempts us. The devil, he's more tempting us with power. But power is acquired through knowledge. So knowledge is sort of the means by which we acquire this power and this pride. That's how I think about it. But it's not that knowledge itself is bad, but I guess I would say that knowledge must be tempered. In other words, yes, you can read books. Yes, you can think through logic chains, all these sorts of things, and that's all healthy and good, and God gave us our intelligence to use it. So there's nothing ungodly about it, but it's an attitude. And when your attitude becomes I have triumphed. I am superior. I know. I don't think. I know. I have arrived. I. When that becomes your attitude, I will not serve. I will not serve. When that becomes your attitude, you are in trouble. And that, friends and neighbors, is the attitude of the passive investing school of understanding how stock investing works. It's an attitude of arrogance. It's an attitude of know-it-alls and show-offs and pomposity. And pride comes before a fall. And so, when this fellow hits it on the head when he says maybe a little knowledge is dangerous, it's not that knowledge is dangerous. It's that all of us, he says a little knowledge is dangerous. Well, the truth is we're only capable of a little knowledge. We're hobbits. We're not geniuses. And it scares us to invest. So we're not only hobbits, we're scared hobbits. And we're tempted to pretend that we know more than we do. And that's the valley of death. When you think you know more than you do. Why is that so bad? It's bad because when you think you know more than you do, you shut out new knowledge, you see, fooling yourself that you possess excess knowledge denies you all future knowledge. And this is the story. This is the passive investing story. The story is brilliant people who came up with wonderful ideas in the 1960s and 1970s, who then turned off their brains in 1981 when the academic research started to show that valuations affect long-term returns, that the efficient market theory is nonsense, and that passive investing can never work in the real world. And these people turned off their brains. They didn't turn off their brains because they think they're stupid and they don't like to use their brains. They turned off their brains because they thought they knew it all. They didn't need to know anything. And so what happened is, as of 1981, there really had been no damage done. Passive investing was, of course, always wrong. But in 1981, there was no damage done because the passive investing school was telling people to be heavily invested in stocks. And that was a good thing to do up till 1981. From the time that passive investing was discovered until 1981. And that remained true all the way to 1995. But by 1995... the evidence that passive investing could not work was a mountain. And the passive investors were totally closed to it. And in 1995 through 2008, it being invested heavily in stocks became dangerous as all get out because of the valuation levels. And all of that intellect that the passive investing advocates hold was being put to use denying knowledge, rationalizing, keeping out knowledge. So, the point of the podcast, dumb is smart, I don't know, is powerful. I'm always exploring the principles of this new model that I call rational investing. Rational investing is how I thought people went about learning how to invest before I became educated in the great safe withdrawal rate debate. I thought that people, you know, I think a lot of middle-class investors think this. I think most do. Most just assume that all these people studying investing, they're trying to learn how to get high returns at you know, low risk. They're all just pursuing their self-interest and then sharing what they know. And the reality is 90% of their energies are being directed to blocking out knowledge because they're so full of pride and arrogance. Because they think they learned everything back in the 1960s when Eugene Fama came up with the efficient market theory. And so now that there's a mountain of evidence showing it's not true, it takes a lot of work to deny it. It's not easy. It's not easy being a passive investor. You know, it's not easy being green. It's hard. It's hard work. It's hard work rationalizing 16 hours a day. But that's what you've got to do once you buy into this investing philosophy. So I've made it a principle of rational investing. And you might not think it. You hear the title rational investing and you might think, oh, it's all about thinking, you know, it's all about being smart. And it's not. When I use the word rational, that's not the sense in which I mean it. I mean truly rational. The truly rational person understands his limitations and understands that he has emotions. He doesn't deny his emotions. And he understands that he doesn't know everything. The rational investor understands he doesn't know everything. So I've made it a principle that I want to avoid. I encourage people. I want to avoid myself the traps of passive investing, and I encourage all others to do so. And so I think it's an important principle. It's not a insignificant principle. Probably the most important principle of rational investing is that valuations affect long-term returns. But that's, you know, in many ways, that's really just another way of saying dumb is smart. Because when you say valuations matter, what you're saying is emotions matter. Because overvaluation and undervaluation are caused by emotion. There is no rational reason why we should have overvaluation or undervaluation in the market. Overvaluation and undervaluation are always caused by human emotion. That's what they are. You know, when you look at the valuation level, you're looking at the emotion level of the market. You're finding out how emotional is this market. And so when I say dumb is smart, I don't know, it's powerful. I'm stating an emotional truth. You know, that it's often the person who doesn't show off, who doesn't have to act like a know-it-all, who is really smarter than the ones, you know, the ones with the big words, the ones with the studies. God help us all. The studies. They have studies from the 1960s and 1970s, but they ignore 30 decades of studies going, not 30, but 28 years of studies going the other way. They ignore those. Studies. They care about studies so much that they ignore 28 years of studies disproving their claims. So, it's really a basic principle. This whole idea of, you know, it's not anti-knowing, it's not anti-knowledge, but it's a question of humility. It's a question of, and this is a John Bogle principle. John Bogle has advocated humility in investing. Unfortunately, he doesn't follow it all the time. That's the problem. But he sees the benefit of it. You know, it's something, you'll find it in Bogle's writings, and I think you'll find it in his tone and his approach. It's there. It's just that he allowed, when it came to passive investing, he allowed arrogance to triumph over humility. Bogle is a rational passive, and he's a humble arrogant. You know, he mixes these things and in disheartening ways, because if he could fasten on to the good part, he really does have the key that will turn this around. But he allows himself to be, for, you know, it's the human tragedy. He allows himself to be derailed. He allows a small idea to capture him and to ruin the big idea that, you know, he should be putting forward, and he should be getting credit for, you know, for having put forward. I think of, just going to tell you a story. It's a, just because it, I always think about it when I think about this, when I say dumb is smart. I used to work at one of the big six. Well, I don't know what the number is now. Is it big five or big four? One of the big, at the time, it was big six accounting / consulting firms. And I was in a lobbying group. We lobbied to get tax provisions in legislation. And I would have people from client offices all over the United States, and really all over the world, but usually they were United States, but we got some global calls too. And they would call me, and if they were concerned about a tax provision, you know, in a piece of legislation, and I was the person you would go to find out, you know, what the provision did and where it stood and the politics of it and, you know, what we expected to happen to it and all that sort of thing. And I had a charge, you know, you had to fill out a timesheet to get paid, and you know, you're supposed to have a certain number of billable hours. And they would charge, you know, I thought they were obscenely high rates. You know, the Hobbit felt a little funny when they were charging, you know, $350 an hour for my time. And, but, you know, it was sort of a funny situation sometimes, because the people who would call, they were generally partners. And so they knew their tax stuff very well. You know, they were tax professionals and they'd been working in the field for years. And I'm not, you know, I mean, I had a degree in tax, the law of taxation. So, you know, I knew some of the technical stuff, but I wasn't a tax practitioner. I was a lobbyist, you know, and so I was studying legislative procedure. That was really my field. And, you know, I knew the provisions, but I didn't work with them. So, you know, they'd have questions. You know, they had worked on these mergers and stuff, and they'd say, oh, you know, well, what happens if, you know, this and this and this? And I'd be like, well, you know, darned if I know, you know, I knew where the provision stood. I knew how likely it was to be included in the bill and things like that. And I knew the basics, but I didn't always know the details like these guys did. And it sometimes put me in a difficult spot because, you know, I'd be in a conversation and the guy would say, well, this is really important to me, whether it's, you know, whether they understand, you know, such and such a thing. And the answer a lot of the time was, not only did they not understand it, they could care less. You know, they were worried about getting the votes, and, you know, they weren't worried about, to this guy, it was very important because, you know, it was the work he did. I understand, but he was worried about it at a level at which, you know, they were not. And so there was no answer to his question. But I always had this thing in my head of, if I don't know some technical aspect, you know, and sometimes I'd want to ask him, you know, I'd want to say, well, can you explain that? Because if I understand the practical problem, I could go to somebody on the Hill and explain to them and say, look, you know, did you know about this? And, you know, pass along the information. But then that makes me look a little dumb. You know, if I say, how does that work again? You know, it makes me look a little dumb. And they're paying me, you know, $350 an hour to talk to me. So you don't want to look too dumb, you know. And so I used to try to study, you know, I'd get the provisions, I'd try to study them on the bus so that when somebody called me, I would know. But, the question is just, when you put yourself forward as an expert, should you say you don't know if you don't know? And I think a lot of people take it the wrong way. You know, I think most people would admit if you don't know, you should say it. But we're all strongly tempted to fake it. And the more money you're getting paid, you see, the more that's true. If I was sitting with a friend and he's asking my advice, I would, of course, say I don't know. But when you're getting paid a big hunk of money, you don't want to say that. So these guys in investing, they're getting paid, you know, millions. And they don't want to say, I don't know. You know, if somebody raises their hand like this guy, you know, somebody says, well, the efficient market theory doesn't really make sense. You know, to where, you know, Mr. Expert. And the expert might have doubts. But if he says, well, good point. Yeah, it doesn't really make sense. The guy's eyes are going to pop out like, what? You just told me to invest all my retirement money according to this idea, and now you're telling me it doesn't make sense? You know, what a... No, you can't do that. So they've got to fake it. And this is what's been going on. They've been faking it for close to 30 years now. And of course, they got away with it, faking it. You know, they were faking it in the 80s and 90s, but stocks were going up, not because of passive investing, just because stocks usually go up. Wasn't because the passive investing people were right. The rational investors were right, too. Everybody was right until 1995 when prices, you know, got to an insanely high level. So they were faking it, and faking it worked. And then, of course, the longer it works, the harder it is to back down. You know, what do you say now? You know, you've been telling people it's, you know, it's not 10 years you've been promoting this stuff. It's 20 years, 30 years. What are you going to do? You're going to say now, you know, oh, sorry. Got it. Oh, sorry, we were wrong. Sorry about those numbers we told you to use in your retirement plan. Oops. You know. So the point is, if you want to be an expert in investing, you've got to be able to admit you don't know. You've got to be able to admit, because all learning starts with the words, I don't know. Just think what the word means. Think what it means to learn. Kids learn more than adults, right? Why do they learn so much? Because, well, partly I think their brains are you know, like sponges. But part of it is they don't know anything. They've got so much they can learn. You know, everything. Everything is a knowledge experience. You know, I love it when my boys ask these questions. You know, like I'll be reading a story and they'll say, the small one always asks these, you know, what's that word mean, Dad? You know, and I'm like, it hits me like he didn't know what that word meant. You know, it could be a very basic word, and it's just so great to think you're telling him about this word that will unlock things that he otherwise wouldn't know. But in other words, when you're 7 years old, the whole world, you know, I remember, oh, I shouldn't get off on this, but I remember the first time we took the older boy to the ocean, you know. He never saw an ocean. Think of what that is, to see the ocean. So you can learn. But the reason why children can learn is because they don't have this hang-up about pretending they know everything. They can admit they don't know anything because they're not supposed to know anything. But when we get grown up, and somebody's paying us $2 million a year to be an expert, we've got to act like we know things we don't know. And boy, that's eating that forbidden fruit. That's going down the road we shouldn't go down. That's how we get ourselves in a whole lot of trouble. So I want to read. There are some wonderful comments on this thread. I'm not going to read the whole thread, but I am going to read a couple of the comments because I can't even find my... Holy smokes. I moved away. There it is. Okay, I couldn't find my cursor. So what am I going to do? All right. So Roosevelt expressed some doubts about whether passive investors are as smart as they sometimes think they are. And, you know, here's a guy says, you know, and this guy relates. What's this guy's name? Rad Audit. And he says, you're not the only one who feels this way. And he says, it sure would be a hoot if several years from now, the next batch of economists prove that wide diversification of assets wasn't the way to go, just like Keynes refuted Say's law about the economy finding its own natural level. Well, that's right. I don't know, be a hoot. I don't know if it's a hoot. It's a sad hoot. But, the people who discovered that valuations affect long-term returns, they disproved the efficient market theory, which means they disproved passive investing. It's already been done. It was done 28 years ago. It just hasn't been acknowledged. So, yeah, you know, p- people learn things and then they learn new things. You know, just because they came up with this passive investing idea doesn't mean that was the last thing we were ever going to learn about investing. If they had just announced their findings and kept open minds, it all would have been wonderful. They learned wonderful things. But it was this idea that no one could ever learn anything again, that was the end. That was the big mistake. And that's the, you know, that's the thing we're all paying a price for today. Let's see. This guy, and then somebody gave some answer. I'm going to ignore it. It wasn't worth reporting. But then Roosevelt comes back and says, he says, I get it. You know, he's not denying the dogmas, but he's saying the point is you can have 35 years of no return with stocks. So stocks are wonderful if you have forever, but otherwise, why bother? You think you are being prudent, but then all the risk shows up. I think that's a nice common sense statement. It's true. Passive investing works if you're willing to wait 30 years. But no human being, no middle class worker is able to wait 30 years to get their money back. It's just crazy talk. And it's reckless and imprudent to invest that way. And people who bought into the passive investing idea did indeed think they were being prudent. That's the real shame of it all, the real sadness of it all, that they thought they were being prudent and they were being sold the most reckless investing strategy ever dreamed up by the human mind, in my opinion. And then he says, I will stay the course even if stocks go to zero. I will do that because if I abandon the system, then the rest of my life I will not know how to invest. Well, that's a sad thing to say. Why not just turn to a better informed approach? I thought that I had reduced my financial stress by learning all this stuff. And now I find I may have more stress than the people that have been all bonds and the panic sellers. I think in the long run, the diehards will be vindicated. I hope it happens before I am incontinent and demented. That was Roosevelt again. I know there's one comment in here that's absolutely wonderful, so I have to, one of the best comments I've ever read, so I have to get to that one. It's not too much farther down, I don't think, so I'm going to try to skip down a little bit. Let me see. Daryl, this is a comment by Daryl. Let me see. Captain Midnight, that may be the one. Yeah, Captain Midnight. Sometimes the smart thing is to panic. Staying the course, although it is difficult and takes courage, may also be a stupid thing to do. You see, that's right. Long-term investing, I think, is the answer. But if you're, you know, it's like that saying where they say you have a choice of putting all your eggs in one basket, you know, either having all the eggs in different baskets or put all the eggs in one basket and watch that basket really close. What passive investors do is they say put all your eggs in one basket. In other words, stick with one strategy, never change. Well, that's good if you've got the right strategy, but what if you made a mistake? What if you've got the wrong strategy? If you've got the wrong strategy, panic is the best thing you can do. To not panic when you've got the wrong strategy is to go down with the ship. That's the worst of all worlds. And that's what passive investing did. What the people advocating passive investing did was they got the numbers wrong. All of the numbers are wrong because they don't count valuations. So they're all wildly wrong. And then they tell people stick with them no matter what. Don't sell. Just, you know, go down with the ship. It's a disaster. So, yeah, staying the course, you know, takes courage. It sounds like a courageous thing, but sometimes the courageous thing is just a stupid thing, you know? We like people that have courage that will, you know, go in and do something dangerous, but we don't like people that are stupid. And you've got to distinguish the two. You know, passive investing is just stupid. The idea of staying at the same stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels is just stupid. It's not courageous. It's not prudent. It's not smart. It's just stupid. It's just what it appears to be. So Captain Midnight says, in my opinion, Captain Midnight, in my opinion, the problem with the Boglehead dogma is that they thought they had the problem knocked, and having learned the one big lesson, didn't have to pay attention anymore. So there were endless discussions of tweaking the small value allocation, while they were silently blindsided by huge risks they ignored. Asset allocation is a sophisticated strategy, but the problem is, was, and will remain, how to make money and not lose it. The proper posture is to be as nervous as a sparrow, always. Read everything you can, especially about the things you think you can ignore. This bogleheadist culture of reinforcing each other, bucking each other up with stay the course, is exactly the wrong stance. Investing cannot be reduced to an algorithm for very long. This downturn was predictable. It only seemed to come out of the blue if you refused to give serious attention to the dissidents, like Rubini, Roach, Schiller, and others. Sorry if this sounds harsh, but that's the world we live in. And then he has a quote. You know, a lot of these posters have quotes at the bottom of their screen name. And the quote is from Isaiah Berlin, and here's the quote. The history of thought and culture is a changing pattern of great liberating ideas that inevitably turn into suffocating straitjackets. Passive investing is a liberating idea that was transformed into a suffocating straitjacket. Captain Midnight has it exactly right. That's true investing wisdom. But then if you read on to that thread, they didn't lynch him. You know, in the old days, they would lynch you if you said something like that. That would be the end of Captain Midnight. But they didn't lynch him. But there were a couple who expressed skepticism. I mean, that's fine. You know, there's no harm in that. But it tells the mood. The mood today is, you know, when stocks were insanely overvalued, the mood was lynch anybody who tells the truth about stock investing. Today, the mood is, we're not going to endorse that. We're not going to go down the road of really looking into the realities. We're not going to try to learn. But we can't get quite as angry anymore as we used to. We can't be quite as proud, quite as arrogant as we used to be. So, you know, that arrogance is breaking down, and as the arrogance breaks down, my hope is that the bogleheads and the diehards and all the others will find themselves in a much better place. I wanted to read a comment also on this that I think relates to this theme from the blog of Brad DeLong. Brad DeLong has a popular blog, and he had a blog called blog entry called "What Would We Do If We Took Schiller Seriously?" And I commented on the blog, and I don't want to go into my comment. It relates to something I did a separate podcast on the theme where I talk about the equity risk premium. What causes it? There's a whole podcast on that. The equity risk premium explained at last, or the equity premium puzzle explained at last, I think it was called. But there's a guy who commented on my comment, John Lounsbury, and he says, I thought his comment was interesting. He says, Rob Bennett, your comment touches on the old adage about the efficient market hypothesis. The average investor cannot beat the market because the average of all investors is the market. That's the efficient market hypothesis. This incorrect statement fails to recognize that the majority of investors underperform the market while a minority outperform the market. I would propose a new efficient market hypothesis. The market serves the function of efficiently transferring the poor performance of the many to the outperformance of a few. I think he's right. What he's saying is right. What he's saying is, what passive investing does is it takes a lot of money from middle-class investors and reallocates it to a small number of well-informed investors. In other words, we're often told that the average long-term return for stocks is 6.5% real, and that's true. But investors who follow passive investing don't get that 6.5. They may get 3. You know, they may get a fraction of that. So if that's most investors. Most investors have bought into all this stuff. You can't time the market, stocks for the long run. You know, stay the course, buy and hold. So if you follow those sorts of principles, you're not going to get that 6.5 in the real world. So, but that really is the number. That's the average. So if that's the average and 90% of investors can't get it, 10% are getting a whole lot more than 6.5 real. You know, that's that statement, I think it was by Rothschild, who said, bear markets are God's way of returning equities to their rightful owners. See, what happens is when prices are insanely dangerous, the popular, you know, the experts tell the middle class to put all their retirement money in stocks, and then when the price goes down, of course they have to sell because we have to eat. And then when we sell, you know, the small number of investors who are well informed enough not to take the experts seriously buy all the stocks at low prices, and they end up making, you know, far in excess of 6.5% real. So it's very sad. It's very sad. You know, it's the rape of the middle class, really, but it not intentionally so. I don't believe it's intentional. I strongly don't believe that. And in a sense, we rape ourselves because, you know, nobody forced us to go along with these ideas. It's not like any of this is quantum physics. You know, anyone with common sense knows that it can't be true. How could it be that stocks are always the best thing to buy? I mean, you know, does that make sense? That there's one asset class that is always the right choice, no matter how, what the price? Does that make sense? Does it make sense? So, you know, it's the rape of the middle class by the middle class. The only thing I'd say is that you know, the comment, I agree with what the guy says, but it saddens me. And all of my work is aimed at changing that. And when I read a comment like that, I start to have doubts. You know, am I going to be able to change it? Am I up against, you know, a law of history that can never be overcome? And my thought is it can be overcome. And I talked about that, yes, in the last podcast, 98. Are bubbles inevitable? And that's sort of the, the middle class is always going to be transferring wealth to the wealthy. If we always go along with the sort of investing wisdom that has been bestowed on us for the past 30 years. But I don't think that has to be the case. There certainly is a record of it. Passive investing has been tried 4 times in history, and it's brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it every time. This is the 4th time this has happened. It's the worst. Passive investing became more popular this time than any time in history, but it's always produced the same result. The average price drop on the 3 earlier occasions when we went to insanely dangerous prices was 68%. This time, it's as of today, it's 60%. Going back from January 2000 till today, it's 60%. So we're a little, you know, the price crash is probably not over at this point. We probably have at least 8% more to go, and overvaluation was so much greater this time than ever before that it may well be that we're going to go beyond 68%. And of course, you know, in the Depression, we went to 80%. But valuations this time were even higher than then, so we may be going to greater than 80%. But the point is, it's always produced the same result, and it's disheartening to see it play out again. But I don't think that means that it can never change, because the thing that made it so bad this time is, I think, this new internet communications technology. The middle class has a way of spreading information that never existed before. And of course, when prices are insanely dangerous, the information that was being spread was buy stocks. Buy, 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 buy. Stocks are the most dangerous they've ever been. Put all your money in stocks. Buy, buy, buy. Don't sell, buy. That same internet technology could be used not to promote passive investing, but to promote rational investing. In other words, we could turn this around. We could use it to spread good information. And the good information isn't always say sell, sell, sell. It's not the opposite of buy, buy, buy. That's the mistake we always make. The mistake we always make is to say we've destroyed ourselves by buying stocks when they were insanely overvalued, and now we'll destroy ourselves a second time by selling them when they're insanely undervalued. What we need to do is to break that emotional chain, break the manic depressive approach to stock buying, the passive approach, and go to a rational approach, which acknowledges the obvious realities that price affects long-term return, valuations affect long-term returns. And then you've broken that chain. But see, in order to be able to see that, one thing we need, I think this is the simplest statement of what we need, is it's not enough to know. This is the benefit of dumbness. What do I say here? Dumb is smart. If you're smart, if you think you're smart, you think the whole thing is how much you know. And see, that was Roosevelt's mistake. He thought the key was knowing, and he thought he was smarter than these people who acknowledged they didn't know anything. If you acknowledge you don't know, learning, the possibility of learning opens up to you. If I wish people could, you know, think back to some time in your life when you just were wrong about something. Did you ever get in an argument, you know, with your spouse, and you're wrong? What happens? There's two kinds of arguments. There's arguments where you think you're right, and there's arguments where you think you're wrong. When do you get more angry? I think most people get more angry when inside they know they're wrong. You know, you might say logically you should get more angry when you think you're right, but we don't. When we think we're right, we're sort of, well, we're not really, you know, we're a little mad, but we're not really that mad because we think we're right and the other person just doesn't get it. But when we think we're wrong, then that's when the defensiveness comes out. That's when you want to shut them up. I don't want to admit I'm wrong. But see, if you don't have this need to act like a know-it-all, you can admit you're wrong. So you never get into that mode of denying knowledge. That's the secret to long-term success in investing, because none of us, you know, think about it. Investing is something you have to do. You have to start when you're in your 20s. How could you possibly know everything about investing when you first start investing? Nobody knows about anything in life when they start. But if you're going to adopt an attitude that, you know, in order to justify putting your money at risk, you have to pretend to yourself that you know everything, which is what the passive investors do, then you're doomed, because you're pretending you know everything when you don't. And once you pretend you know everything, no new knowledge can get in. It's a trap. It's a trap. So that feeling of relief, you know, say you're in one of those arguments and you know, with your spouse and, you know, or a friend, a good friend. And, you know, you sort of know, on some level of consciousness, you know you're wrong, and so you're really angry. But then they say something that sort of melts your heart. You know? You become aware that you've actually hurt their feelings, or, you know, something they say reminds you of, you know, why you love them, or all the good they've done in your life, you know, whatever it is. And you catch yourself and you say, you know, that little part of your brain opens up and says, I'm not going to say something nasty. I'm going to say, I'm sorry. I'm wrong. Have you ever, you know, we've all had that experience, right? Doesn't it feel good? I'm sorry. You're right. I'm wrong. Doesn't it feel good? It's all over. You say those words, or, you know, how many words? I'm sorry. You're right. I'm wrong. 6 words. And like that, it's all over. And the person looks at you with new respect and new affection. You know, 10 seconds ago, this person you loved was arguing with you. They look at you, and you feel new respect and affection for yourself. How could you not? Those magic words, they're so empowering. Because we were meant to pursue truth. You know, we were meant to pursue truth. We weren't meant to win arguments. That's not why we were put on Earth. I make arguments. I construct arguments for a living. I went to law school to learn how to do it. I mean, I'm scarred. But we weren't put on Earth to construct arguments. I think an argument could be made. We were put on Earth to touch hearts. And when you say, I'm sorry, you're right, I'm wrong. We touch a heart. We connect. And all kinds of things become possible then. All kinds of things become possible then. The person can hear you in ways they could never hear you before. And you can learn things you could never learn before. A world of opportunity opens up. I quoted from this song. It's a song I wrote when I was in law school. It's a big world out there. And there's nothing you couldn't do. Just don't let any small ideas get a hold of you. For some reason, you know, I don't know where the line, I probably stole it from somebody, but I like that line. I just think small ideas are what kill us when they become our friends. They kill us. And the only way to get rid of them is humility, not to need to be a know-it-all. Dumb is smart. I don't know is powerful. I'll give one last illustration of the point and shut it down. I make the rounds of the internet and I'm usually looking for investing articles, but you run across other things. And I have my little niche is to look at things that on the surface don't have anything to do with investing and relate them to investing because they have something to do with emotion. Human emotion, or how humans think, or how humans learn. Because I think that's the whole game. That's 70% of investing, and it's the 70% that the investing people never talk about. So that's the 70% we get wrong all the time, over and over and over and over again. That's the 70% we need to change to get out of this mess. And I saw an article, and I liked it today, and I can't even tell you where it ran. I think it was in some foreign newspaper, but it was a woman, and it's controversial, and I'm gonna say what she said, and I hope that people won't be offended. I'm gonna sort of, because I see merit on both sides. I don't take sides, but I was glad that this woman wrote this side of the story because often people don't. But it was basically about feminism, and this woman was saying, I don't know what her age was, she was maybe 40, but she was She was a successful playwright. And she was saying when she was younger, she was a feminist. She wasn't an active feminist, I don't think, but she just thought of herself that way, a modern woman, let's say. And, we all have these dilemmas. She had to make decisions. Do you put all your energy into your career, or do you put it into getting married and having children? And she elected to put in her career, and she was very confident of that decision. And now she looks back and she says, I've made it. I'm a success, but I feel empty. I don't feel like a success. I wish that I had married when I was young and had children. That's a painful thing to say. Now, the reason why I'm touched by her story. Now, first let me say, I'm not taking sides. When I was growing up, the norm was the other way. Women would get married at 20. And probably at that time, you could have had a woman 40 years old saying, I wished I had a career. I married a man. He turned out to be an alcoholic. I've become a slave. I wish I had had a career. So, there is no perfect human life. And so, I think we should be touched by stories on both sides, but I'm not, not taking sides on the question, but I am taking sides that I think it's a good thing the woman expressed her thoughts, because I think these ideas need to be aired. And I'm going to tie this to investing. You just wait. But my wife and I, we married late. I was 35 when we were married. I was 42 when we had our first boy. My wife was about 40, 39, I think, just about to turn 40. So we waited. And then, you know, because we waited so long, we had a very hard time having children. And you know, we were going to these fertility doctors and all these things. And I see these other women and sometimes talk with them. And there's a lot of women that waited for a long time to have children and, get very emotional if they can't. They're hurt. And I remembered, because I was sort of, getting involved in this, and then I talked to people, and then I read this article where the doctor we were seeing was a fertility doctor, and the fertility doctors had these people coming into them all the time crying, and they all got together and they said, we're gonna run a public service ad letting women know the statistics, that after age 35, your odds of successful pregnancy start to diminish pretty rapidly. And it wasn't to say you should get married, at 20 or anything like that. It was just to say, these are the facts. Do what you think is best, but we would like people to know the facts. And a lot of women don't know the facts today. They've been caught up in this idea that they need to put all their energies into a career. And they're not aware that there's another, there's a potential downside. And they took out the money for this, and then some group complained, that this was shouldn't be permitted, and they stopped it. And I just, I'm a journalist, so I think anything that infringes on free speech tends to rub me the wrong way. And because I knew some of these women, as I say, I think there are stories the other way. I don't say you should only have articles the way this woman wrote it. I don't believe that. But I think, I think of it like a novelist. A novelist would sort of explore both sides. And the drama of the individual life comes in, how do you make that decision? Well, where I want to tie this back is this woman telling the story. I think, it took courage and took heart. And it took intelligence, to write it the way she did. And I guess I felt this liberating feeling in what she wrote. I don't know what's going to happen to her life from this point forward, obviously, and no one does. But it was sort of that moment that I'm talking about when you say, I'm sorry, you were wrong, I was right. In other words, she was saying, I made a mistake. Now, for somebody else, it may not be a mistake, but she was saying, for me, it's a mistake. And, but when these doctors weren't able to take out this ad, it reminds me of what happened to me when I was telling people the dangers of passive investing, and people were saying, Rob, you're so mean, Rob. Why say these things? The three times when stocks have been at these prices, we saw 68% price drop. Rob, you're making us feel bad. Don't tell us that. We're trying to live in a fantasy world, and you're interfering. You're a troll. You're a troll. And I think that's wrong. I think that's wrong. Whenever a belief becomes so dogmatic that people cannot tolerate questioning, that's a sign it really needs to be questioned. Because if people are so sensitive, and not that I don't have sympathy for them, I always talk about investors in pain. The reason why passive investors are so dogmatic is because they're in such pain. But my feeling is when investors are in pain, you don't say, oh, it's too much trouble to point out what the historical data says. I'll invest rationally myself, but hey, if they all go to hell, so be it. Not my problem. That's not right. That's not right. We don't have a right to expect people to follow us. If I say, look, I think lower stock allocations are in order, and somebody says, well, sorry, Charlie, I think you're wrong. Well, I have total respect for that. He's got his life and I've got mine. He earned the money and he's got a right to do with it as he pleases. But what happened with me on many discussion boards is we had hundreds of people saying, I want to hear what this guy says. I want to learn. I have questions. And you had the small group of big shot know-it-alls who said, no, there will be no questions. This makes, you know, this makes people question our orthodoxy, and we cannot permit it. When people become so defensive that they have dogmas that cannot be questioned, in my mind, they have to be questioned. You know, I always took that as a sign that I can't not question this now. It's bigger than I realized. And I guess, you know, that's what I mean by the phrase when I say dumb is smart, I don't know is powerful. I hope I never go down that path. I hope I never say, you know, I will laugh at the idea of passive investing. I make a sincere effort never to laugh at the people who endorse it or follow it. I hope that I honor that rule. The people should be respected. The idea, I don't think, should be respected. The idea, I think, should be ridiculed, because the idea hurts human beings in very, very serious ways. So I do laugh at the idea, and I think it's healthy to laugh about it. I'd rather laugh about it than rant about it. So I think that's healthy. I hope so. But the very idea that we can't talk about it tells me there's something wrong there. And I hope that's going to come to an end. And I guess what I would say is what we really need is a change in the culture of investing. It's not the rules that need to change. It's the culture. We need the culture to change so that we all reach a level of humility where we want to hear what the other guy says. And then learning will just explode. Learning will just explode. There's just no telling what we can do. Sometimes it takes a tragic event to bring on change. That's how change happens. Sometimes you have to be scared to death to break down those walls, to break down those barriers, to be young again, to be a child again, to learn again, to stop thinking you're the king, to go back to learning, which is what makes life exciting. It's what makes life fun. So we all need to go back to being able to say, I don't know. And when we can all say, I don't know, we can all begin learning. And when we all begin learning, we can all begin investing more effectively. And when we begin investing more effectively, we can begin earning our financial freedom at ever earlier times in life. If you have any thoughts, I hope you'll connect with me. I hope you'll go to the contact Rob button at the left side of every page of the site. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care, you big dummy.